I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. The Roman Catholic Church's extraordinary Synod of Bishops on the Family has been meeting at the Vatican last week, and it released a document on Monday that seemed to express a more accepting view of gays and lesbians, of divorce, of birth control, and cohabitation. The response has been swift, with some embracing the change tone, while others are harshly critical, especially on the section called Welcoming Homosexual Persons. Our guest, Elizabeth Dias, religion correspondent for Time, says, slow down. This is a work in progress and does not mean a shift in doctrine, at least not yet. And Elizabeth Dias, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
So what were the bishops saying, or what are the bishops saying?
Well, it's true. It's what are they saying? This document that came out on Monday is a halfway marker of the Synod, the Extraordinary Synod, as it's actually called, which is fitting for all of the buzz that's gone on about it. But the document is called a Relatio, which is Vatican speak for a report after debate. So the bishops met in Rome last week and had an entire week of conversation about issues facing families in the modern context around the world. And then to prepare for the second week of the Synod, a small group of the bishops condensed the conversations and wrote this midterm report. And as you said, the section that's been getting all of the buzz, especially in the Western press and here in the United States, has been the section called Welcoming Homosexual Persons. But, you know, it's really important to note off the bat that the document changes no doctrine for the church. It doesn't propose any changes, doesn't propose any changes in moral teaching. It doesn't have any teaching authority. But what it does do is it emphasizes and lets the world know the tone that the bishops want to present and really work on in parishes going forward.
Well, let me read the section that has gotten so much press play. And this is section number 50. It says, homosexuals have gifts and qualities to offer the Christian community, and then asks, are we capable of welcoming these people, guaranteeing to them a fraternal space in our communities? This is a question, not a statement. But some of the observations, even some of the criticisms of this report or this document, is that it doesn't use the word sin and homosexuality. Do you see that as significant?
Well, I think, you know, the Vatican is very careful about its language. You know, it doesn't really make mistakes often when it comes to words that it uses and wants to use. So traditionally, the language connected to homosexuality has been about sin. And so it is noteworthy that instead it's talking about welcome and gifts and the positive aspects of personhood that you know, gay people have and live. And so it certainly is noteworthy that the emphasis is not about sin, and that goes with the Holy Father's real focus so far in his young papacy about mercy and changing the starting place of Catholic conversations. You know, it's not about lists of rules and checking boxes or where you failed or, you know, what gets you into heaven and what does not. It's about a pilgrimage, really, of life here. And what does that mean for sort of the positive ways that we can relate to each other? And that's, of course, you know, aside from the question of where the lines really are about, you know, what's okay and what marriage is and is not in the Catholic Church.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions about the Pope. One is that he did commission a survey before this meeting. I don't know how unusual that is, but it seems that he got some response from some of the faithful raising some of these questions that have shown up in this document.
Right, absolutely. So we're seeing a bit of Pope Francis's Jesuit training come forth. You know, he's the first Jesuit Holy Father. And one of the things that's very important in Jesuit orders is listening and listening to everyone. So one of the things that he did, he had bishops around the world survey their own congregations about the issues that families face. So we have everything from divorce, cohabitation in more Western developed countries specifically, and then when we'll have answers and issues being raised about war and economic realities of health crises and things like that, or polygamy even in some of the African dioceses. So bringing all of those elements to the table at the beginning was really important for all of the bishops gathered then in Rome to hear. And what they've been doing at the Synod is each bishop really has sort of 4 minutes to press the button and talk about different topics that are being raised. So, you know, it's a good reminder that the questions about homosexuality are really just a portion of the broader discussion about issues facing families around the world.
I also read that the Pope added, I think, 6 progressives to the leadership to help write this document. And one wonders, with his track record on some of these issues, whether he's kind of pulling the levers behind the scene to get a document that really reflects his point of view.
Well, Pope Francis is very strategic. You know, we've seen that. He has very clear qualities as a manager. I think that's one of the reasons that he was named to be the Pope. It's what a lot of the bishops around the world were looking for. And, you know, you're right. He has this committee of 6 helping to craft the documents coming out of the Synod. He has his group of 8 or now 9 cardinals, you know, who are really guiding him in a, you know, more policy, pastoral way about other issues around the world. And it's a good marker of seeing the moves that he does want to make, is who is he appointing, who is he having in these new, really, positions of power and to give voice to issues that looks like he's tapping.
Well, in fact, he appointed or asked Monsignor Bruno Forte to write the section on gays, and he's an Italian theologian, but he's known for being perhaps more accepting than some of the other bishops on these quote-unquote irregular unions.
Yeah, and one fun note for some of your listeners is he was actually in Princeton a couple of years ago, and even though he's Italian, he makes the rounds and gives voice to a lot of these topics. So I think, you know, yes, there has been chatter about what were his words,
right?
How did that fit with his the secretary who's sort of overseeing the documents coming out. Do they agree? Do they not agree? And I think it's a mistake for observers to think that everyone agrees just because there's one document. It's really about putting issues on the table, and that's something that Pope Francis said from the get-go at the Synod. You know, he asked everyone gathered, speak your mind, say what you think. Don't be afraid of what I might think, of what others might think. In order for us to really move forward, he's saying we need to be better listeners and we need to be courageous enough to speak.
Well, in fact, some of the cardinals, perhaps even bishops, have been critical of this. A cardinal from South Africa, Napier, called this interim report virtually unredeemable, basically saying it does not reflect Catholic doctrine. And there are a number of other people that have pushed back on this interim document.
Well, I think that also shows you what's at risk for a lot of people, just in terms of tone, you know, not in terms of substance or doctrine. I mean, again, the doctrine, it actually reaffirmed a couple times about Catholic marriage being between one man and one woman. And so the reaction on both sides is worth noting and a good indicator, too, of places where the church around the world is not unified and where there's tension. We will have another document coming out of the Synod. This was just a working document, a starting point for small group conversation. And then we'll have a year's worth of more conversation. Then we'll have the World Meeting of Families in Philadelphia, a traditionally conservative diocese in American Catholic politics. And then after that, we'll have yet another synod with even more bishops from around the world. So this is just a snapshot of where the conversation was this week. And we'll be able to see where it goes in the weeks ahead for sure.
Will there then be a final sort of document or report from the synod that then, what, goes to the Pope to sign off on or make policy on?
So that's what they're talking about, having at the conclusion of this synod a more formal report about, you know, where things stand coming out of it. But, you know, the way that Catholics, these types of documents work, you know, it's not the same thing as, you know, what they would call like a papal exhortation, which is, you know, the words of the Pope, like a very much more formal document about his vision. These are more framing documents, I guess I'd say, and it will, you know, even when the synod concludes, it's again to set up the synod next fall, and so the work will be continuing through that.
What I thought was interesting, and it seems very very Pope Francis, if I can say that, but before this meeting, as I understand it, there was an event on the piazza. People were there. There was a chorus that was singing. And he seemed to be saying to those meeting at the Vatican, you have to remember the people. He even said things like, don't engage in power plays or, you know, hogging the microphone, if I can put it that way.
No, I was in Rome last week and in the square for that moment. And I have to tell you, it was pretty powerful. And you're right. It does say a bit about who the Holy Father is. In most Catholic or religious events, you know, when there's going to be a big discussion, of course it would begin with a time of prayer. But this event in the square was even before the opening Mass. And the square filled with, probably at least 10,000 people, you know, as dusk fell and everyone held up a candle. And the bishops and the Holy Father were up at the front of St. Peter's. And so, you know, if you imagine being in their shoes, it was like the Holy Father was presenting the people of the world to them, saying, and, you know, looking out at all of these candles, how could they not forget that image as they go in to think about the work that they have to do on behalf of those families. It was pretty beautiful.
Well, Elizabeth Dias, thanks so much for getting our conversation started.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. She's religion correspondent for Time, and we are talking about the Roman Catholic Church's extraordinary Synod of Bishops on the Family. They are meeting in Rome at the Vatican. They met last week. They're meeting this week as well, and on Monday released a document that seemed to express a more accepting view of gays and lesbians, of divorce, birth control, cohabitation. We have two guests waiting in the wings, and we will carry on that conversation. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia continues its 50th anniversary concert season on October 19th and 20th at the Kimmel Center. In a program mostly from the Baroque era, Philadelphia Orchestra principal cello Haye Nee joins the Chamber Orchestra to play and conduct music by Vivaldi, Tartini, and Haydn. Tickets available now at chamberorchestra.org or 215-893-1709. That's chamberorchestra.org or 215-893-1709.
Supporting WHYY, Solbury School, a college preparatory day and boarding school for 7th through 12th grade. Located in New Hope, Pennsylvania, Solbury School offers an average class size of 11 students and is dedicated to helping every young person discover the scholar, the athlete, the artist, and the leader within them. Solbury School's open house is Sunday, October 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. Details at 215-862-5261 or solbury.org.
Tyler Park Center for the Arts supports WHYY, presenting Crafts in the Meadow Fall Invitational Juried Craft Show, October 18th and 19th at Tyler State Park, Bucks County. featuring works from more than 100 fine artists and craftsmen, representing a variety of artistic and functional mediums. Highlights include demonstrations, hands-on art experiences for all ages, music from John Beecher and the Common Ground, and more. For details and a list of artists and musicians, tylerparkarts.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking about a document released by a meeting of Catholic bishops. They are in Rome. And this document suggesting a changed tone in how the church views gays and lesbians and other hot-button issues. Joining us now, Father James Martin. He's a Jesuit priest, author, editor-at-large at America. That's the National Catholic Magazine. Also author most recently of a book called Jesus, a Pilgrimage. And Father James Martin, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
My pleasure.
Also with us is Michael Viola. He's the president of Dignity Philadelphia. That's a community of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender Catholics, families, and friends. He practices family law at the Philadelphia law firm of Schoenberg and Viola. Also staff attorney at Philadelphia VIP, which connects volunteer attorneys with low-income Philadelphians. Michael Viola, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
As
good
well.
Morning.
Let me begin with you, Father Martin, because you were one of these people that just had a very big reaction to this document, calling it a stunning change. How so?
Well, it's the first time that we've heard language like this coming from any sort of organization like a synod of bishops or, you know, any body in the Vatican. And Elizabeth Dias was right. It's only an interim document, but it gives us a snapshot of how a significant number of bishops are thinking. And one of the comments that the document made was that it even praised homosexual partners. The mutual aid, it says, that they give one another constitutes a precious support in the life of the partners. I've never read that anywhere in any Vatican document about LGBT people. So I thought that was a pretty stunning change of tone.
Well, in fact, let me quote from this document, and this is number 52. Without denying the moral problems connected to homosexual unions, it has to be noted that there are cases in which mutual aid to the point of sacrifice constitutes a precious support in the life of the partners. And Father Martin, you're saying you have never heard that coming from the church before?
No, and in point of fact, I think if I had said that 5 years ago, I would have been disciplined or, scolded. To sort of talk about the love and affection between same-sex couples within same-sex unions is unprecedented. I haven't heard it from anywhere in the church like that. That sort of candidly and without a kind of caveat saying, but these people are sinful. It's just sort of blatantly said in number 52, as you quoted.
So what is your reaction, Michael, to this overall document, this part we've been talking about?
Well, I think, as you're mentioning, it's a very positive tone. It is very welcoming of the church. And I think a lot of that stems from two things. One, as you mentioned earlier, there was the questionnaire that was sent out to everyone. So it really seemed that the bishops listened to the people, as opposed to it always coming from top down with the church saying this is what you have to do. They wanted to get a sense of how the people feel, what their issues are, what their concerns are. And the other segment in the interim report that I also found very telling is actually in the 11th paragraph, which talks about accepting people as who they are. And I think that really connects very well with the later paragraphs about LGBT people and LGBT relationships, because the church is saying, look, these are how our people are. We have to accept them. We may guide them on a different journey, a journey closer to the church, which is fine, but this is what we have to start with.
Going back to you, Father Martin, and again, this is a work in progress. It gives us, I guess, a bit of a window into some conversation or even debates that are going on inside the church. But as I said to Elizabeth Dias, and only because it's out there, a number of cardinals, bishops, and members of the Catholic Church disagree with this document, and they say it violates church doctrine.
Yeah, a few of them came out very strongly yesterday in the press conference and then in other interviews. Even Cardinal Dolan of New York this morning on CBS News said this needs major revisions. But, you know, it's not surprising. There have been differences and arguments and divisions within the church since the time of Peter and Paul. And the Second Vatican Council, the Great Reforming Council, was also kind of riven with these factions. I think the difference is we're seeing it now out in the open. And, during Vatican II, it wasn't being tweeted in every 5 seconds. So, but it's a necessary process. We believe the Holy Spirit works even through these divisions and these discussions. And eventually, you know, we trust the Spirit will help us bring a document that will really help people in the end.
Well, there's this discussion about the tone of the document also. But back to you, Father Martin, which is that what is not in here, which has been in previous documents about homosexuality, are the words intrinsically disordered.
Well, that's right. And, you know, we'll see if that makes it back into the final document. And as Elizabeth was saying, you know, there's part two of the synod next year, and then there's the Pope's apostolic exhortation, so he could take that out. But the bishop said specifically earlier, before this document was released, that they're very concerned with language. They're concerned with language like living in sin, intrinsically disordered, contraceptive mentality, all these buzzwords that have been kind of bandied about. And you'll notice in the document, the section on you know, LGBT people is welcoming homosexual persons. I mean, that to start not sort of ministering to or judging them or on homosexual persons, but welcoming. So they're very conscious of the language they're using.
Well, I'm curious to you, Michael, and others who are part of Dignity Philadelphia. You are practicing Catholics.
Yes.
This is a church that has not changed the doctrine. We might be talking about language and tone, but the doctrine still stays. How do you practice your faith under these conditions?
Well, I mean, I always look at it from this perspective. I am as God made me. And through Dignity, I was able to find a welcoming community where I can practice my religion. We follow the traditional Catholic ritual, but we're more welcoming. And we're as a community, at a place where, according to this interim report, the church is developing. It's like they're getting now where we've been for the past 40 years. And we see our connection is with the church, but through our practice. We recognize that we have our relationship with God, and that's not going to change.
But does that mean ignoring doctrine?
Well, I think if you look back, and I'm not a scholar in any stretch of the imagination in Catholicism, there's been a tendency for people to pick and choose what they're going to follow.
The cafeteria Catholics.
Exactly, the cafeteria about. Catholics. And I'd probably sense there's a lot more cafeteria Catholics than the church would like to admit, which gives rise to why you have comments like this within the report about contraception, about definition of family, about LGBT people. Yeah, so people are picking and choosing what they want to follow.
How do you feel about that, the cafeteria Catholics, Father Martin?
Well, I think that you have people in the cafeteria on both sides. I think it needs to be pointed out that there are people that sometimes choose to downplay some teachings, but there are people that choose to downplay the church's teaching on social justice and caring for the poor and the death penalty and those kinds of things too. So, you know, it's a big cafeteria. I mean, I think the invitation to all Catholics is to read the teaching, to understand the Gospels, first of all. I mean, it's all centered on Jesus, and to form opinions, you know, in a well-formed conscience. And that's the challenge for all Catholics on all church teachings.
We have an email from Regina to you, Father Martin, saying, my question for James Martin, is the LGBT focus mainly in the United States?
Well, that's a very good question. The LGBT focus, you know, in terms of the, I would say the response in the media was largely in the West, but I do think that was the most significant change in the tone, you know, in this particular document. But in terms of the Synod, you know, she's right. There are other issues that, you know, for example, a bishop from sub-Saharan Africa or from the developing world, you know, in Latin America or the Near East are going to bring that are going to be very different. The bishops from poorer countries were talking more about things like child slavery and, you know, trafficking, things like that. So, you know, as Elizabeth was saying, this is one of many issues that the, you know, that faces the family worldwide, but also that the Synod is trying to deal with.
And just picking up on that, this document does look more open-mindedly, if I can say, at things like divorce and cohabitation. Do you see this, Father Martin, as connected to the LGBT issues?
Well, only in as much as it's connected to listening. And listening and responding to these surveys and also trying to meet people where they are. And, you know, a hallmark of Pope Francis's papacy is mercy, trying to be compassionate and accompany people where they are.
To you, Michael Viola, and even back to Dignity Philadelphia, mm-hmm. is the goal of Dignity to change the church or to provide a sacred and safe space to be a Catholic?
Actually, it's a little bit of both. It's primarily the latter, to provide that safe space where people can be who they are and people who where they can feel comfortable, but also to try to work about change in the church to the extent that we can.
And how do you, I mean, do you do that by living it or by protesting or op-eds?
We've done a little protesting in the past. We've done some, you know, op-eds. But we also do it by living, and it's not just having our service and existing. We try to be very active within the community to work with the homeless and various other events that we and organizations that we participate in, because we want to continue what Jesus was doing on Earth, and it's consistent with what Pope Francis has been saying. It's like, yeah, we're already doing that, and we just like keep doing that.
Father Martin, do you see them? Pope Francis sort of orchestrating this from behind the scenes? Is there, I mean, it sort of looks that way from the outside, but what do you think he's doing behind the scenes?
Well, I don't think he's exactly orchestrating it. I think what's happening is, you know, he wanted some broad consultation. He had been talking about what's called synodality, you know, the kind of concept of synods as being important in the church. You know, for years, even before his papacy. So he really respects the idea of kind of communal discernment and people kind of contributing to his thoughts as a group. He respects the bishops. So he's getting their advice, in a sense, and then he will take that, you know, and come out with this apostolic exhortation. But he very much did set the tone by talking about mercy early on. By the same token, he opened it up to conversation by saying to people, don't be embarrassed about what you think and what you say. Be open. So he trusts the Spirit. But I think, you know, ultimately, if the Synod, in a sense, comes to a point where it agrees with him, he will have a much stronger hand when he writes his apostolic exhortation, because he can say, you know, as the Synod and I, you know, agree, blah, blah, blah. So I think that's kind of strengthening his hand. I think it's pretty strategic, I would say.
Well, and Elizabeth used the word strategic as well to describe this pope. But is that how doctrine changes, which is it goes through this process and then the pope gets the final say, showing my ignorance of the Catholic Church?
Well, sometimes it does. Sometimes the pope will make a statement on his own, will proclaim something. You know, oftentimes it works up through theologians. Sometimes it's reflected by the faithful. So it depends. There's lots of different ways that doctrine will change. But, you know, ultimately it's the pope who kind of makes the final decision and puts it into law.
Is that what you're waiting for, Michael?
It would be nice. I'm not anticipating it happening in my lifetime. But I think the welcoming is a very positive step. It's a step in the right direction. I mean, one of the things that, from my perspective, that the church has always been grappling with is losing members. And you can't continue to grow if you are shutting people out. And I think the problem that the bishops may have is once this interim report is out, it's sort of, you know, once the horse is out of the barn, well, how do you take back a welcoming statement? Mm. Say, well, we didn't mean it. We're not that welcoming. You're only welcome on some times of the year. It's like, no, it's either you're welcome or you're not welcome. And this door has been open saying, no, we are welcoming LGBT people, and we want them to feel comfortable. We want them to be embraced by the church.
Let me reintroduce both of our guests, and also just to remind our listeners what we're talking about. On Monday, some Catholic bishops meeting at the Vatican in Rome released a report that has created quite a stir. It suggested a more open view towards gays and lesbians, divorce, birth control, cohabitation. Some conservatives and some members of the church don't agree with this report and believe in some cases it violates church doctrine. Others are saying don't overreact to the headlines of this report. We are talking with Father James Martin. He's editor-at-large for America. That's a national Catholic magazine. He's written a number of books, including most recently one called Jesus, a Pilgrimage. Also with us, Michael Viola, and he's president of Dignity Philadelphia, community of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender Catholics. Also a lawyer here in the city, and he's a staff attorney at Philadelphia VIP, connecting volunteer attorneys with low-income Philadelphians. We got a big response on our Facebook page when I posted what we were going to be talking about today, so we want to hear from you. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. What do you think of this document? And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. We have an email from Tom, and I had a question about this as well to you, Father Martin. He says the Synod has used the term gradualness and graduality. Can you shed some light on the meaning of these terms?
Yeah, it's a term in moral theology, and it basically means that not everyone is at the 100% mark when it comes to following Catholic teaching. Some people are on their way, and we want to try to follow them and support them along their way. So not everybody is in the perfect situation, and, you know, nobody's perfect, to quote Some Like It Hot. and so I think it's a very merciful and compassionate way of meeting people where they are and recognizing that people in, you know, what are called irregular marriages and divorced and remarried Catholics and that are cohabitating, you know, that these are loving, good people, and we need to accompany them and listen to them. So gradualism says, you know, meet people along the way.
But does it say that these people who might be sort of outside of our the belief system of the church, that they will gradually join us, or that we will perhaps gradually understand how they practice their faith?
Oh, I see. I should have been clear. They're talking about Catholics, basically. So,
right.
For example, if you're a Catholic who's living together before marriage, you know, you don't shut them out of the church. You say, look, we'll try to meet you where you are and try to, you know, move you towards kind of a full marriage, something like that. So it's actually less talking about people from other faiths and more talking about meeting Catholics where they are.
Do you see or do you feel like you practice the law of gradualism, Michael?
I try to. And it's really basically you're not going to be able to get people to always buy in 100%. So we'll take them a certain portion of the way. We'll follow them down a certain path. From a family law perspective, this happens fairly often in custody cases.
Sure.
Where you try to get people to just gradually increase time, change how they're dealing with each other over time so that they can actually do things better for the children, which is also something that this report talked a little bit about.
In fact, it talked about the children of gay and lesbian couples.
Yeah, it did. And my take on that was really interesting because that's where the sense that being gay from the church's perspective is still a sin comes back in. I read that language as being don't take it out on the children for what the parents are doing or what the parents have done, whether that's an LGBT couple or a divorced couple. I find that positive in some way, but it doesn't completely eliminate the other aspect of it, which is, well, you know, the parents may have sinned somehow.
Do you want to speak to that almost up on a break here, Father Martin?
Yeah, I understand that point. I still think they're kind of grappling with language and grappling with, you know, how to deal with this. But I do think it's a step forward. I mean, there are cases in the United States of pastors who have, you know, ejected kids from Catholic schools because of same-sex, you know, being children of same-sex couples. So nonetheless, I think it's a step forward for the church.
And just again, quoting from the document, the church pays special attention to the children who live with couples of the same sex, emphasizing that the needs and rights of the little ones must be given priority. That's what you're talking about,
exactly.
Michael.
Exactly. Yeah, it's definitely, and the situation that Father Martin just talked about is the church should not be punishing the child, taking the child out of, you know, parochial school because of the parents.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking with Michael Viola and Father James Martin about this document that came out of this meeting of Catholic bishops in Rome at the Vatican. It has raised some interesting questions, and that's what we're talking about on Radio Time. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia continues its 50th anniversary concert season on October 19th and 20th at the Kimmel Center. In a program mostly from the Baroque era, Philadelphia Orchestra principal cello Haye Nee joins the Chamber Orchestra to play and conduct music by Vivaldi, Tartini, and Haydn. Tickets available now at chamberorchestra.org or 215-893-1709. That's chamberorchestra.org or 215-893-1709.
Supporting WHYY, Solbury School, a college preparatory day and boarding school for 7th through 12th grade. Located in New Hope, Pennsylvania, Solbury School offers an average class size of 11 students and is dedicated to helping every young person discover the scholar, the athlete, the artist, and the leader within them. Solbury School's open house is Sunday, October 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. Details at 215-862-5261 or solbury.org.
Tyler Park Center for the Arts supports WHYY, presenting Crafts in the Meadow Fall Invitational Juried Craft Show, October 18th and 19th at Tyler State Park, Bucks County, featuring works from more than 100 fine artists and craftsmen, representing a variety of artistic and functional mediums. Highlights include demonstrations, hands-on art experiences for all ages, music from John Beecher and the Common Ground, and more. For details and a list of artists and musicians, tylerparkarts.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We are talking about what a lot of people are talking about this week, and this is a document released by Catholic bishops meeting in Rome. They started meeting last week. They are also meeting this week, saying that the church should be more welcoming to gays and lesbians, also more accepting of couples that are living together before marriage, those who are divorced, even seeming to be more accepting of the use of birth control. And we're talking with Father James Martin, again, a Jesuit priest, author, editor-at-large at America. His most recent book is Jesus, A Pilgrimage. Also with us, Michael Viola, president of Dignity Philadelphia, community of LGBT Catholics, also a lawyer here in Philadelphia. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times and join our conversation. Again, we had a pretty interesting and vigorous conversation yesterday and this morning on our Facebook page. This is to you, Michael. We got an email from Ed saying essentially, to what degree might the church be making these changes in reaction to other Christian denominations that have welcomed LGBT community, LGBTQ individuals? The idea that other churches, not all of them, but some of them that have basically not just welcome, but said, you are part of us.
It's definitely something that any organization has to deal with when they're deciding to exclude any type of person. And as I've said before, because the church is running a risk of losing more and more parishioners, with other Christian denominations saying, you know, you're welcome here, people will move over. I know several people who are no longer affiliated with the Catholic Church because they prefer to be with a more welcoming Christian community.
And I wonder, Father Martin, just, you know, how much this is a response to the fact that the Catholic Church has been losing its faithful, in part, I think, because of the sex abuse scandal scandals involving priests. I think there's also questions about the ordination of women. But how much do you think this is in response to the fact that it has been losing people in the pews?
I would say very little for a couple of reasons. One, remember, we're talking about the worldwide church, and if we're looking at the rest of the world, where it's gaining members, you know. So in a sense, so this is all the bishops talking. In India and Africa and Latin America, the church is really exploding in terms of, you know, new members and baptisms and things like that. I think it's more in response to listening to, as Michael Viola was saying, you know, they had these surveys that the bishops took, you know, under the direction of the Pope. And they heard from parishioners and people in the pews, you know, what their thoughts were and what their hopes and desires were. So I think they're listening. And what they're hearing is, people want to have their LGBT brothers and sisters feel welcome and, you know, be reminded that they are, in fact, as they are, by virtue of their baptism, part of the church. So I think it's in response to the listening.
Do you think the church will, I'm not saying in your lifetime or my lifetime, but do you think the church will change doctrine on this issue? Is that, you think, in the cards in any way?
No, but I think they're going to be, and they are being, much more open. I'll say we are being much more open. And I think that the call for the church is the call that Jesus invites us to, which is to, you know, help everyone to meet God, to welcome people. You know, in terms of gradualism, Jesus met people who were tax collectors and, Roman centurions and people who were at the time thought of as kind of beyond the pale. Jesus welcomes them. I'm not comparing LGBT people to Roman centurions. But the point is, we are meant to welcome everyone. And I think for too long, LGBT people have been treated, in the church as outsiders when they're fully Catholics. Just there's, Michael is as much a Catholic as I am, and he should not be made to feel otherwise by anyone. And I think that's what this document is reflecting.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, go ahead, Mike. And you're not a centurion.
That's right.
But the... But dignity, whether on the local level or the national level, we always acknowledge that comparison, that Jesus specifically worked with marginalized individuals. And for many years, that's how LGBT people felt within the church, that we were marginalized. And that's why we've developed our organization, not only locally, but also nationally.
What, though, would make you feel comfortable? You meet in the basement of an Episcopal church.
That's
in
correct.
Philadelphia. So you're not meeting in a Catholic church. You meet Sunday evenings. I mean, what would make you feel more welcome, more comfortable going to a traditional Catholic church?
Well, I guess that for me personally, as an LGBT Catholic, there are two things that would really make me feel welcome. One is the church officially not considering me disordered. For being in a loving, legally recognized relationship. And the second is that, you know, the homilies that are preached on a regular basis really have to resonate and connect with the parishioners. And one thing I've always found with dignity is that you always feel that the homilist is talking to you about something you can relate to. And I didn't always have that experience with the regular church.
Father Martin, I'm assuming there are gay priests, you know, with parishes in the church. I don't know if we know how many there are or whether that in any way changes our conversation.
Yeah, of course there are gay priests. I mean, I also want to add that, you know, they're celibate. When people who are gay, they generally think sexually active. But, yeah, there are celibate gay priests and members of religious orders and bishops, you know, and probably cardinals, you know, who are maintaining their vows of chastity and their promise of celibacy. And I think that has to change the conversation. I think the more comfortable a priest is with his own sexuality, if he is gay, right, the more he is more able to reach out to people and understand the needs of the LGBT community. But, of course, you know, he's not just a priest for that community. He's a priest for his entire parish, you know. I think it certainly affects the conversation. I wish people could be more open about it. I mean, it would be great if, you know, one of the bishops says, you know, as a gay man, I too, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
We had a caller who couldn't stay on, and I'm sure you're not surprised, Father Martin. There's just a lot of suspicion about this particular document. But she says, or the caller, she says, this move is all about money. And perhaps this is, you know, from their perspective, this is the church losing followers and losing money and trying to get people back in for financial reasons. Your response to that?
I think that's ridiculous. I mean, I don't understand how you would sort of propose a document like this and sort of connect it to money. So I don't know what to say to that. I mean, you know, basically they are responding to the what they heard in the listening sessions and in the parishes. This is what people want. And, you know, not everything is about money in life.
Let me get looks like Elsie from Bucks County to join us on Radio Times. Or did I say your name correctly?
It's Elise.
Elise, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hi. I found it interesting that one gentleman mentioned that if the bishop's meeting and what came out of it was not a reflection of like European or U.S. values and the changing demographics in the church on our end, but rather from the developing countries where the growth was so tremendous.
Right.
But the fact is that most of those countries are very conservative when it comes to LGBTQ and family matters. And I just wanted him to address that dichotomy.
Yeah, Elise, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me toss that back to you, Father Martin, and then I'll get you in on as well, Michael.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think you saw some pushback, for example, from Cardinal Napier from Durban yesterday. He was the one who said that interim document was, I think, you know, nearly irredeemable. And yeah, I don't think that a lot of the – it's bad to paint them all with the same brush, but right. I don't think that many of the African hierarchy are going to be happy with that particular passage. So we will see, you know, how much influence, you know, different factions in the church have on the final document.
Go ahead, Michael.
Well, my thought on that, and I've got to switch hats and put my lawyer hat back
on.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I think where the church is trying to come up with a perspective, a policy, or even at some point a doctrine, which is going to take into account the cultural norms and the laws of all these different countries. So that's where you're going to have that tension where in one country there may be polygamy is allowed, It's not allowed in the U.S., but in many states in the U.S., same-sex marriage is allowed. How do you have a doctrine or a policy that's going to cover both of these groups?
Mm.
And that's where the tension is going to arise in the church.
Do you agree with that, Father Martin?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, we always have to remember these documents. I mean, we read them naturally because, you know, we're living in the United States. We read them through our own, you know, lenses. But this is a document that has to, as all church documents have to, address the universal church. I mean, you know, the poor person in a favela, you know, in a very, you know, simple parish, you know, and the person, you know, at the cathedral on the parkway. You know, in Philadelphia. So it really needs to balance those things. That's why I think it's as radical as it is. I mean, that's why I think it's as stunning as it is, because knowing that they are addressing people that might have a difficult time with LGBT people, they are still saying in this interim document, you know, the mutual aid that one another, that the two people give to one another constitutes a precious support. I mean, that's pretty radical if you are not even used to thinking about gays and lesbians at all.
But do you agree with Michael when he says, you know, if you use those words, and as Elizabeth told us, the Vatican is always very careful about the language it uses, but if it uses those welcoming words, Father Martin, you can't take it back?
Well, remember, this is an interim document, so that can be taken back. I mean, you know, it's going to be revised this week in some way, and I'm sure we'll see it toned down a little bit. And then we have year two, and then we have the apostolic exhortation. But while this may be toned down, you know, the Pope in his final document may tone it up a bit. I mean, he tends to sort of push us further than we want to go to begin with. So, you know, it's up to the Pope in the final analysis.
You want to add anything to that, Michael?
No, I agree. I think it's from a PR perspective, you know, putting out a welcoming message and then toning it down a little bit is going to rub some people the wrong way, where it's the, well, I thought you were welcoming us. Did you mean it? Did you not mean it? And that will maybe be something that some people end up struggling with once there's a final document. But as Father Martin said before, you'll probably see that more in Western culture, more in the U.S., where it's a bigger concern for some people.
Let me quote this group, Voice of the Family. It's a conservative. It's opposed to abortion. And this is some of their response to this document. This is Maria Medici. She's a coordinator of Voice of the Family. Says, what will Catholic parents now have to tell their children about contraception, about cohabitating with partners, or living homosexual lifestyles? Will those parents now have to tell their children that the Vatican teaches that there are positive and constructive aspects to these mortal sins? This approach destroys grace in souls. So there certainly are critics in this country, Father Martin.
Yeah, clearly. I don't think listening to the Holy Spirit, which is active in the people of God just as much as it is active in the Pope and the Synod of Bishops, you know, destroys souls. I mean, it's the opposite of destroying souls. And the other thing is, no church teaching has been changed. It's not a final document. And the other thing I want to say is, to that response, being homosexual does not mean being in mortal sin. You know, simply being homosexual is not a sin. And so some of those premises are, to begin with, false.
You want to add to that, Michael?
Well, I just also want to point out that the response to that comment to me is what Pope Francis had said earlier on. It's, who am I to judge? And whenever a parent, if a parent is going to be having that conversation with a child, and if you're looking at the perspective of, you know, the Vatican is teaching that this couple is living in sin, but that's okay, that's judging. And really, that's where I think that's the solution. So, you know, we're not supposed to be judging other people.
Let me quickly reintroduce you. That's Michael Viola, president of Dignity Philadelphia. He's also a lawyer here in Philadelphia. And joining us from NPR in New York, Father James Martin. He's a Jesuit priest, author, editor at large of At America, and that's a national Catholic magazine, author most recently of a book called Jesus, a Pilgrimage. And again, we are talking about this document released on Monday from Catholic bishops that are meeting at the Vatican, and it raises a whole host of questions that we have been talking about in this hour of Radio Times. And we want to hear from you. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499, especially if you are a practicing Catholic or you were a practicing Catholic. And you can certainly send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Father Martin, this is to you. I think it's interesting that Pope Francis officiated at a, I think it's it was a marriage ceremony, something like 20 people. One of them was a woman who had never been married, who already had a child. I believe one was a divorced woman. One was a couple that had been cohabitating.
No same-sex couples there, though.
No same-sex. No, exactly. No same-sex couples. But nonetheless, these were couples that haven't normally been, I guess, recognized by the church. What do you make of his officiating?
Well, I thought it was amazing for two reasons. One, normally when you have the Pope doing public masses like that on a large scale, it's people who are, you know, in a sense, Simon pure. I mean, they are at the 100%. This time you didn't. The Pope was making a very clear statement about, you know, who the church is ministering to. But another thing that didn't get out in the media that I found out from a friend of mine, get this, those couples were not specially chosen. It wasn't as if the Pope was making kind of a, you know, like I'm going to pick people who are living together and have kids and whatnot. Those were couples who happened to be scheduled for marriage on that day. So in other words, it's a good snapshot of the people that the church is already ministering to. I mean, this is not new for people in parishes or for pastors. They are already ministering to people like that. What the Pope is doing is just kind of bringing that out in the open. So I thought it was a fantastic message.
But does that, Michael, tell us sort of who Catholics are?
Right? It really does. And it really goes back to what we're talking before about listening, and that this Pope is listening to the people. And it also ties into what Elizabeth was saying earlier about the opening, you know, before the opening mass with the crowd of people and the candles, to basically look, this is the church. The church are the people. The church are not the bishops. It's really the people. So you need to listen to the people. You need to take them as they are and work with that which you have to bring them all closer to God.
Father Martin, the Pope has also talked about clericalism, calling it a sinful complicity. Help us understand what he's saying.
Well, clericalism is the idea that priests and bishops and those who are ordained are better than lay people, which is something that Vatican II set aside, that priests should have all the answers, that priests are to be relied on for all the answers, and a kind of elevation of the priesthood as above and better than the lay people, which he really sort of wants us to set aside, and thank God.
Well, and you still love this Pope as much as you did a year or so ago, Father Martin?
More.
More. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
My pleasure.
And Michael Viola, thank you very much as well.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Stay with us for Hour 2. We'll be right back.